sandwich. Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Man, I'm pumped today. Glad to have all of you along with us today. We're sitting here in the Guy James Show studio in Southwest Florida. From the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. Of course, we don't give you the exact location. We don't want the enemy to know exactly where we're at, if you know what I mean. We value our health a little bit too much for that. Welcome to the show. Glad to have all of you along with us today. I guess I already said that. It's another warm, hot, humid day here in Southwest Florida, about 95 degrees, and going to rain about 4 o'clock. It always does this time of year. It's hot many places around the country today. Talked to my brother today out in Phoenix. And he moved to Phoenix, about 2 years ago. Anyway, it's 111 today, going to be 111. This is going to be the 27th day in Phoenix of a temperature of at least 110, which is only one day shy of a record. They've exceeded that for 28 days, so only one day away. So, my, it can get hot places. And, of course, to all our friends, I'm a former Midwesterner, as you know. As most of you know, except for you newbies, of course, originally from Ohio, and man, have they gotten the weirdo weather in Ohio. Tell me that there's not something wrong with the weather pattern. Actually, a good friend in Ohio was mentioning that to me today, that there really is no pattern now. Things just are not following Mother Nature's normal rule of law when it comes to the weather. Findlay and Cary, Ohio, I see, are both in the national news. In Northwest Ohio, the Blanchard River up there, 7 feet above flood level. They just don't have that kind of weather in the summertime. It's unheard of. People getting flooded out in the summertime in Northwest Ohio. Folks, that's flatland territory. I guess they got around 8 inches of rain yesterday, something like that, in just a short amount of time. So, no. All of you deniers that there's something wrong with the weather, that humankind hasn't done something to the atmosphere to screw it up. You're right. We're all wrong, and all the scientists in the world are wrong. There's no global warming. There's nothing wrong with the weather and patterns. This just happens to be the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Hey, you're more than welcome to call the show today. We hope you will. 866-546-5254. We've got a couple of guests coming up in a little while. At the bottom of this hour here, where are my notes? We've got Dilip Hero. And Dilip is currently in London. He lives in London, England, in the UK. And he's a Middle Eastern expert. It's going to let us know how... Well, what does the world think, and how does it look from a historian and an expert's point of view on where the USA is headed as the so-called sole superpower in the world? Are we headed for good times or bad times? And DeLip will talk to us a little later about that. In the second hour today, we're going to have attorney Robert Weiss. And Robert is with the law firm Weiss PLLC, and it's a national law firm with offices in Washington, D.C. and New York City. It's a high-powered law firm, and he's going to talk to us about this bisphenol, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's a plastic additive in many of the containers that we use and used in baby bottles and so forth. CBS broke a story about it, how it may be damned hazardous for our health. And Robert's going to be along to talk to us in the second hour about that. And tomorrow, don't forget, we've got David Enders coming with us. As you will recall, and maybe some of you don't, David was with us live from Baghdad just a few weeks ago. He's a freelance journalist. He's been in Baghdad, spent considerable time there. If you want to hear an unbiased report of how things really are in Iraq, then you stay tuned tomorrow. David Enders will just let us know. He's not got a political dog in this fight. He's simply there to find out the truth, and he's home now. And we'll have him on tomorrow, and we'll also have Dar Jamil on tomorrow, and Dar will also talk about the Iraqi situation, which I believe, despite the way the economy is going here in this country, is the overriding issue of the day, the war in Iraq. And until we get that settled, I don't think things are ever going to smooth out too doggone much here in this country. We have Georgie Bush today in a pickle, you might say. Mr. Maliki, our hand-picked puppet over in Baghdad right now, says, hey, don't you worry, Georgie boy. We can find friends elsewhere if we have to. He was holding hands with Ahmadinejad in Tehran. And proclaiming to the rest of the world, we can find friends elsewhere, but that Bush doesn't have any right to tell us what to do. And so Junior kind of changes his tune a little bit. Say, hey, don't worry. We can work things out if we have to. Don't worry. And of course, things are going extremely well in Iraq. We're starting to hear that now, aren't we? Did we not predict that not too long ago? We mentioned that the closer we got to the September the 14th, that that report, the so-called Petraeus report, is going to come out, that the rosier things would become, not necessarily because things are getting rosier, but because the administration will put on a concerted effort to make them look better, no matter how they are. And we're starting to see that more and more and more in the media. Every single day, they're coming out with a little bit more of that. And, of course, 1 week, lest you think we always get the straight dope from our administration and from our military, 1 week after a series of truck bombs hit a poor rural area near the Syrian border, the known casualty toll of those bombers is more than 500 dead and 1,500 wounded. And that's according to the Iraqi Red Crescent Society. That's their version of the Red Cross, making it the bloodiest coordinated attack since the American-led invasion started in 2003. And you tell me, the American administration, the U.S. administration, the Bush administration, made every effort right after that truck bomb. So, oh, no, they're exaggerating that. They always exaggerated. We hear it's more like 30 folks. And those were the initial reports coming from our side. There was more like 30 people killed, not 100 like they're saying over there, not 150 like there's. And it turns out it's 500. And, of course, we lost 14 more of our folks in a copter crash last night in Iraq. And the military says it was not shut down, that the crash was a result of mechanical failures. We shall see if that ends up being the case. I don't know. I don't know what to believe anymore. It is extremely difficult to believe almost anything coming from this administration anymore, unless you're a Democrat in Washington. And, of course, the Democrats in Washington evidently will go along with and believe anything that comes out of the White House. Have you noticed how the Democrats are changing their tune? Well, maybe we can give them a little more time over there. Maybe we ought to give them another 6 or 8 months. I don't know how many of you heard this. And this is indicative of the tone in Washington, D.C. I yanked this off of NPR. But just listen to this report, lest you think that this administration isn't engaged in a massive, massive propaganda effort to prop up this war so that they can hand it off to the next administration. You see, they know they're going to come out losers in this, and so they want to hand it off. But here's this report, and I don't think anything illustrates my point any better than this does about how the propaganda is just flying around D.C. right now about the surge and the progress taking place in Iraq or lack thereof.
Here's a sample of what the White House, military commanders, and influential analysts have been saying about Iraq over the past 4 weeks.
Our new strategy is delivering good results, and our commanders recently reported more good news.
Security across Iraq is generally improving. Iraqis are feeling it, and they feel a sense the tide is turning.
There's so much positive momentum on the battlefield that it makes sense not to give up while we are starting to make progress.
That was President Bush, Lieutenant General Ray Odierno, the number two commander in Iraq, and military analyst Michael O'Hanlon. Just three examples of a growing consensus among policymakers in Washington. The notion of progress, a word out of vogue for a while, is also making a comeback here in the nation's capital. General Odierno spoke to Pentagon reporters last week, saying the situation in Iraq is complex.
But overall, we continue to make steady progress.
The message is part of a concerted White House and Pentagon effort to preempt any serious political opposition to the idea of extending the troop surge. So, for example, late last month, General Petraeus invited a group of influential Washington analysts and writers to Iraq, where they were briefed by top military and political officials. They were also given access to classified information. Among them was Michael O'Hanlon, a military expert at the center-left Brookings Institution. O'Hanlon's often described as a moderate Democrat. He came back from his 8-day trip and penned an opinion article with another colleague, Ken Pollack, in the New York Times. The article cited security progress in Iraq and called on Congress to back an extension of the troop surge.
And the most earth-shattering policy recommendation we had in the article was to finish by saying, let's give this into 2008, which is not a particularly radical statement since it's almost certain to be the default anyhow.
This position has become the default, at least among influential Washington pundits and analysts, and a big part of it has to do with the O'Hanlon-Pollack article. The White House distributed the piece via email under the heading, A Potentially Climate-Changing Article. The email referred to O'Hanlon and Pollack as left-wing critics of the war, which is not entirely accurate. Both men supported the invasion and the recent troop surge. And now, a few weeks since the O'Hanlon-Pollack article, polls suggest a growing number of Americans are willing to see the troop surge extend through next April. And this is precisely what General Petraeus will be asking for when he delivers his report to Congress next month. According to one source close to the general staff, quote, Petraeus doesn't have to sell Congress on an extension. He's already sealed the deal. Meanwhile, the White House has indicated that it will write the report Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker deliver to Congress, even though just a few weeks ago, the president didn't seem to give that impression.
I'm going to wait to see what David has to say. I'm not going to prejudge what he may say. I trust David Petraeus' judgment.
Paul Hughes, who's a retired Army colonel and now with the U.S. Institute of Peace, argues that a report penned by the White House will only undermine its credibility.
For them to be writing this report is going to diminish whatever ground truth that General Petraeus or Ambassador Crocker have put into their reports.
The White House says the report will be delivered on either the 11th or 12th of September. General Petraeus has until the 15th to deliver the report to Congress. Guy Raz, NPR News, Washington.
You know, it's like John Dillinger or Pretty Boy Floyd or no, but Rob Banks. Oh no, hell no. Trust us, we wouldn't do that. No, we wouldn't do such a thing. No, Bonnie and Clyde. No, Rob Banks. No, we didn't do that. It's the same thing. Believe in the Bush administration on anything they say right now. What? Tell me what they have done to give themselves any credibility whatsoever. For what reason should we trust a damn word coming out of the White House? What reason? Give me a reason that we should believe anything they say. I don't see any examples of honesty coming out of there. I don't. I haven't for six and a half years now. Who has? But trust us, folks. We're going to give you an honest assessment of what's going on in Iraq. You know, General Petraeus, we trust him. He's in charge of all the boots on the ground over there. And, of course, we know that he wouldn't give us a false report. But, nonetheless, we're going to write the report. We'll listen to what General Petraeus says and trust us. We'll write the report for you. And, of course, we'll be right up front. And let us just say right here and now that just another 6 or 8 months or a year or so, something like that, and maybe, I don't know. Let's start out, for starters, let's throw out another $100 billion toward this effort. You know, we're going to need at least that. Never mind that the troops aren't getting these new V-shaped hauled armored vehicles that they need because they don't have it. Never mind any of that. No. Just give us more time. We need more time. We need more time. Stall, stall, stall. I'm an old basketball player, and I know a lot of you remember the old four corners offense where you just spread out the floor and pass the ball around and make the defense come to you and make them look silly. Stall for time. Stall for time. And that's exactly what's going on in this administration. That's anybody with any gray matter upstairs whatsoever can see that that is what's happening here. Bush is desperate to try and save his legacy. What legacy? I don't know. But he thinks he has one worth saving, and to do so, he's going to push this war, pawn it off on the next president, unlucky SOB that might be. It's going to be a Democrat. The question is, which one? I don't know. I know some I don't want it to be, and I'm sure you do as well. We're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Something always brings me back to you. It never takes too long. No matter what I say or do, I still feel you here till the moment I'm gone. You hold me without touch. Keep me without chains. I never wanted anything so much than to drown in your love. not feel your rain. Set me free. Let me be. I don't want to fall another moment into your gravity. Here I am, and I stand so tall, just the way I'm supposed to be. But you're on to me. I'm fragile, and I thought that I was strong, but you touched me for a little while, and all my fragile strength is gone. Set me free.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. I'm feeling a bit, I don't know, hard to describe my feeling this afternoon. Been doing a lot of reading today. Of course, I do a lot of reading every day, but been reading a lot about this Petraeus report, this so-called Petraeus report coming up, and the more I read about it, the more upset I become. And knowing that it's going to be a gigantic piece of propaganda. And you know what? The problem is the Democrats are going to go along with it. Betcha they do. Betcha, except for the likes of a Dennis Kucinich and a few folks like him, I betcha you don't hear much outcry from the Democrats. When it comes time for another vote, after this report comes out in the middle of September, and Junior Bush comes to them and asks for another extension, more money for the war effort, and let's send more troops, let's do whatever's necessary, and in Bush's opinion, betcha the Democrats lay down once again. Betcha they do. What do you think? Do you think they'll stand up tall and keep the promises some of them made a while back when they went along with this this surge? You know, a lot of them at least alluded to the fact, hey, this is it. This is it for me. We're going to let them try this surge, and if things aren't all hunky-dory after the surge is, in September, why then we're out of there. We'll vote to bring them home, but we're starting to hear a different story. We're starting to hear different stories from the Democratic presidential nominees, or not nominees, but candidates. Do I think the Democrats will summon up the guts they need to fight Bush on this? Well, you know my answer on that. The answer is no. Hell no. I don't think they will. I don't know. Don't know what the problem is. Well, I do know what the problem is. They're more worried about getting re-elected than they are anything else. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the Guy James Show today. Love to hear your opinion on many of the things that we're going to talk about today. It's an ugly situation right now. Here we have the entire world looking at this mess in Iraq. And even the French now. The French are jumping in and saying, hey, we can't condemn Americans forever. We know they're wrong in this. We said they were wrong in this from the very beginning, and they did. And, of course, once again, that caused a public outcry from the right. To hell with the French. Down with the French. Freedom fries. No more French fries. All that stuff. Just because the French told the truth. Just because the French were right. And now the French are having the guts to come back and say, well, yeah, we were right, but we can't leave this thing the way it is, so maybe we need to get involved and we need to help. Not militarily. Let's find a solution to it. Ah, somebody with some brains getting involved. We shall see how that turns out. Let's go to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, your friend from Northern Cal here.
Hello, Dave.
The logic that I feel the need often to share is that this war is so very, very profitable to these Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, this PNAC, this Carlyle group. They are making, they're shifting the treasury of the United States into their pockets under the guise of this war. So those people can well afford to buy members of Congress, and they do.
They can afford it, and they have.
They do. And so most of the Congress members, when it comes down to how do they vote, they say, Lockheed Martin, how do you want me to vote on this one? And they're saying, don't get us out of this war now. We are making so very much money, and we're sharing it with you. And I think that's the whole crazy thing of it all. And AIPAC and some of the big oil companies, they are making an absolute fortune on this crazy war.
Sure they are.
That's what this administration is all about. Shifting as much wealth as possible from working people into the pockets of this little ruling elite that they...
And you can see it. You can feel it, the shift of the wealth that's going on. You can just... It's massive. It's not
right.
In dribs and drabs. It's massive.
Right. So whenever you wonder why is it that Congress will cave in, they are owned by the same group of special interests, and except for the few that you mentioned, the few 15, 20 really good members of Congress that don't take that money, that don't sell their souls and this country down the river. But we have so many bad members of Congress, the hope of this country is in serious jeopardy if we don't massively get rid of them.
Well, doesn't look very great right now. This is the first time in my lifetime, anyway, that I have felt that our nation is truly vulnerable and under attack from within and from others. But you know, our government is not protecting us, not getting the job done, and I just feel that this nation is vulnerable right now, and not necessarily from forces from the outside, from within. And, you know, people a lot smarter than I have predicted that over the years, that when trouble came, it would come wrapped in the flag and so forth. And that's exactly what's happened. Hey, Dave, I got to run. We got to get our guest on the phone. Thank you for calling.
The military-industrial complex. Thank you, Guy.
Yep. Yes, beware of the military-industrial complex. An ugly situation, and of course we talk about it almost every single day on this program, and it's a fact, but it's a fact that we have to accept. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with our guest.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth
where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Because the world is round, it turns me on. Because the world is round.
And we're back, and welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as promised, with us on the phone, live from London, the UK right now, is Dilip Iroh. And he lives in London, England, and Dilip is a Middle Eastern expert. You often read what he has to say in The Guardian. And most recently, he's written a book called Blood of the Earth. Dilip, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We wanted to have you on with us today to get a non-biased view of looking from the outside, looking in on the United States. So many times we Americans think that we're absolutely invulnerable, that we're the most powerful nation on earth, the richest nation on earth, and that nothing can possibly stop us from doing anything we want. And I think that many of us here, at least, believe that quite the contrary is true. And I think you will agree, probably, from reading many of your writings, that you think that possibly that the United States is in decline right now. What do you say?
Yeah, I think the United States, I would say, is past its prime. And, of course, I will illustrate what I am saying, which is, you see, there are four major aspects of being powerful. One, of course, number one is military. Number two is political or diplomatic. Number three is economic. And number four is information. You know, who controls information, or, you know, which company or which language is international language, and which companies or states are in charge of information processing is very important. So if we take the first one, military, of course, there's absolutely no doubt that the Pentagon is the most lethal war machine ever put together by human beings. There's no dispute about it. I don't think any other country can equal Pentagon in its killing capacity, destructive capacity, etc., etc. But let's look at Iraq. What's happening in Iraq? Now, in Iraq, 25 to 26 million people, only one-fifth of them are Sunni Islam. And you can see that, of course, not all 5 million are involved, but, you know, many of them, most of them are supporting insurgency. And you can see that insurgency has basically, you know, shall I say, put the Pentagon on a draw. And here, it's not me saying this, Brent Scowcroft, who was op-ed in the New York Times a week ago, in which he said that, you know, we have been wrestled to a draw by an adversary which is not even a state, unquote. So, I mean, Brent Scowcroft, as you know, was a national security advisor to Bush Sr., and before that, Gerry Ford, President Gerry Ford. Now, that only goes to show that, of course, we all understand that. Of course, I mean, all, anybody who knows about diplomacy and military understand that in some ways, you know, war is another form of diplomacy. And in any case, military power has limitations. And if anybody wants to see the illustration of that, you only look at Iraq. Okay, we accept that within 3 weeks, the Pentagon, run by Don Rumsfeld, did actually defeat an army of Iraq, which was at that time 400,000 strong. Okay, I mean, that's a great achievement in terms of military history. There's no dispute about it. But what happens next? And what kind of a mess has been made? I don't have to go into that. As you know already, 70% of Americans say it was wrong to invade Iraq. So I think that's first, that even though America remains very powerful militarily, its misadventure, its illegal invasion of Iraq has shown the limitations of military power, and that can be seen by everybody, including Americans themselves, that that is the case. That's one. Then we come to political or diplomacy. You know, in diplomacy, and of course the fact that Bush and company, basically pumped up by the New York Times, went on to this thing, we are an exceptional nation. We do unilateral actions. We have been hit in New York and Washington. Now nobody's going to get in our way. See, I mean, very simple. Look at Afghanistan. Okay, you know, the UN Security Council passed a resolution within 24 hours. All the countries sympathetic. NATO actuated its Article 5, which said that if one country is attacked, all countries are attacked, and we support you. What happened? Bush said, go away. We don't want you. You know, we are going to ourselves. You know, I mean, all the Americans are going in. Of course, they had support from the Northern Alliance, which is against Taliban and the Afghans, you know, okay, but as far as the international force is concerned, Bush said, go away. We will do it ourselves on our own. Okay, and you know what's happening in Afghanistan now. He, of course, at certain point, Bush had to retrieve his position, call in the NATO forces, etc., etc., and it's a long haul. So I'm simply saying this whole thing, like, we are exceptional. We don't want anybody. Just, you know, multilateral things, oh, no, no, we don't bother with them. See, you know, quite honestly, you know, people have, you know, and I don't mean people, you know, politicians in power with immense power. You know, where is United Nations established? Established in New York. Where is it in New York? New York in the United States. Do you know when FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, was discussing setting up the United Nations after World War II, he insisted it has to be in the United States, the new organization. Otherwise, we will not join. So there is the United Nations, which is a multinational organization. And again, to remind your listeners, no less than Kofi Annan, UN Secretary General, said on a BBC World Service International Radio that this invasion, this war in Iraq was illegal. Illegal, according to the UN Secretary General. So, having done that, that failure of diplomacy, and of course now they're trying to retrieve their position, and Condi Rice is trying to work with other neighbors on the Iran issue, etc., etc. But I'm simply saying that, again, America is weak in terms of diplomacy now. Then we come to the economics. You know, 10 days ago, Bloomberg News had a list of 10 top companies in the world with the highest market value. Of the 10, 3 of them were Chinese. I mean, I'll give you the names: PetroChina, China Mobile, which is a mobile company, and of course, China Industrial and Commercial Bank. They are the top 10. And of course, America has more than China, 5. So all other countries in the world, including Japan and Britain and France, etc., they only have 2 other companies in the top 10. And where was China 20 years ago? Could you, you know, I mean, so in that period, China has progressed so much economically that they have topmost market value corporations in the world, only behind the USA. And already, China is number 3 in the world economy. You know, after US, Japan, and then China, they have forged ahead of Germany. So you see, again, of course, everybody knows. I'm sure if you look at your, I have a computer here. It's Dell. And what is said at the other side of the machine? Made in China. So all these things, you know, China has become the industrial manufacturing base of the world.
And their economy is growing faster, at a faster pace than any other economy on Earth. Is that not true? The Chinese, their economy is growing faster than that of any other nation on the planet.
Absolutely. I think China is expanding at the rate of 10 to 12% a year. You know, you see, and if you compound this rate, you know, that means if you are progressing 12% a year, you are doubling your GDP in 6 years. See, so I think I'm simply, you know, setting out these, you know, 4 things that I said. And finally, something which doesn't strike many people, international news information television 24-hour service. Now, just go back, 1991 Gulf War. Okay, what happened then? In Baghdad, there were only 2 companies, Western companies, sitting there and reporting on it, the BBC and CNN, in 1991. Move forward, 12 years later on, the American invasion of Iraq, 2003, there was Al Jazeera Arabic. Now, Al Jazeera Arabic, quite honestly, actually was single-handedly slowed down the progress of Rumsfeld's scenario. Rumsfeld wanted to get to Baghdad 7 to 10 days. And, you know, any hot war goes along with psychological warfare. You have to build up stories and you have to give censored news to the media, and the whole atmosphere is such that, you know, you go, 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 go. Now, because Al Jazeera, with their own real-time images, contradicted what Pentagon was putting out, that really slowed down the process. I'm not saying, you know, reverse the whole process. It slowed down the whole scenario of Rumsfeld and company. Now, Al Jazeera Arabic was only in Arabic. You might say, so what? It's only Arabic. But you know what happened? During 2003, American, I should say, Anglo-American invasion of Iraq, many, many companies in Europe, in Asia, in Latin America, they bought the clips from Al Jazeera Arabic and showed them, of course, with translation, you know, dubbing on the screen as to what they were saying. So that for the first time, and this is something one really must underline, for the first time in history, the public at large in the world had 2 versions of ongoing war in real time. And who provided that? Al Jazeera Arabic provided the second option, second version. Now, since then, as you know, Al Jazeera English came on about a year ago, and of course, they're now France 24, and they openly say it's a French point of view. If you look at Al Jazeera English, which is in English, they openly say we are giving Arab and a Muslim point of view. Then, of course, Russians are about to start their own thinking, Russian point of view. Now, again, since you are in the Western Hemisphere, there is that gentleman, Hugo Chavez. Telesur, the Latin American channel, got started, and they are competing with the CNN in Spanish. So it's very important that we have now multiple channels with the diverse perceptions, which are clearly marked. And already, you know, Iran has started its own 24-hour in English called Press, PRESS-TV. So that way, the Anglo-American hold on 24-hour news, international news in English, that was there until the early 2000, is gone now. And that's a very important factor because, as you know, I know, you are in the media, I am in the media business, I write books, articles, give interviews, that how we, what information we receive, how it's processed before it reaches, that is very, very important for us to form form an opinion, and then on opinion you can act on it. So I think I'm just giving you this overall view that basically it's not that America is going to be challenged in the way like by the Soviet Union, but these important countries that have come up, I explained about China. Russia is very important now because they have the largest gas reserves in the world. Gazprom is the largest gas corporation in the world, 450,000 employees. And of course, then you have Venezuela giving a hard time to Bush and company. And of course, there is Iran in the region of the Middle East giving a hard time to Bush and company. So I think all of these rising powers are a challenge, not a challenge, direct challenge to say, okay, we take you on. You know, who is stronger militarily, not that way. But they are draining away the primacy of that America has enjoyed, again, militarily, diplomatically, economically, and in the information sphere.
And, of course, without the economic primacy, America or no nation on Earth can maintain the most powerful military on Earth without the economic and of course, with the information, I believe the information of the American press has been squandered around the world, the credibility of it. What do you think about the credibility of the American press?
Well, I think a very good question. I think, you know, since you mentioned my book, Blood of the Earth, but of course, before that, of course, as you know, I published 18 books on the Middle East, and I have 2 books on Iraq War, and I have, you know, my book on the Iraq War is called Secrets and Lies, My Personal Iraqi Freedom and After. And I tell you what I say, Secrets and Lies, on the fly leaf of that book, I have a quote which I think I would like to read to illustrate, and I'm going to answer your question about the credibility of America. This is George W. Bush speaking at the Oval Office on July the 14th, 2003. That's 2.5 months after the Iraq War, and these are his words. The larger point is, and the fundamental question is, did Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after reasonable request, we decided to remove Saddam from power along with other nations so as to make sure Saddam was not a threat to the United States and our friends and allies in the region, unquote. Now, can you believe this? Can you believe this? I mean, the facts are that the UN inspectors started to do inspections in Iraq November 27, 2002, and they carried on until March 18, 2003, 2 days before the Anglo-American invasion of Iraq. And in that time, they conducted 731 inspections at 411 sites and found WMD Zilch. Now, that's a fact. What I'm saying is now, when you have U.S. President, the most powerful man in the world, basically making up facts like this as he goes along, and he wasn't saying this while he was having a barbecue at the Crawford Ranch or something. He was in his office, and this is on record. It's published by the Washington Post. Now, see, therefore, the credibility of America is very low. I mean, you know, not only in America, but of course, as I said earlier, that, you know, 70% of Americans think that what was wrong. As you know now, 65% of Americans have an unfavorable view of the leadership of George W. Bush, which is only 1% less than the figure for Richard Nixon before he resigned in 1974. So I think the credibility of America is, I mean, low. Nobody's going to trust America. Of course, they go on about Iran and the nuclear program, and again, there I have to say, you know, I really have to sometime I don't know, shake my head or just say, you know, something is, you know, what's wrong? You know, George W. Bush 2 weeks ago had a joint press conference along with Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai at Camp David. You know what he said there? He said, the Iranian leaders have said that they want to make a nuclear bomb. I really had to, you know, I mean, I don't know what to say. And then, of course, as you know, you mentioned earlier, I write for The Guardian. I did a piece in The Guardian, a comment, is free, and in which I actually give the quotes. The quotes are from the Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei in September 2004. He said, he issued a religious decree, fatwa, that having Islamic atom bomb is un-Islamic. Then on the November 5, on a Friday prayer meeting in Tehran of 2004, same leader publicly said that I have repeatedly said that we don't have it, we have no intention of making atom bomb, and I have said having an atom bomb is un-Islamic and we are a believing nation, unquote. Now, there we are, these facts which are, you know, I mean, on record, which they are published, they are broadcast, etc., and there is George W. Bush saying, you know, brazenly, that we just have said that we are going to make an atom bomb. I mean,
well, at other times in history, like you say, the information, if it was only the American press coming out, maybe the world would be inclined to believe George W. Bush. But now that both sides of the story are coming out, and more than just one press account from the Americans, I think the rest of the world is starting to understand that George W. Bush doesn't tell the truth very often. Truth isn't something that is one of his good points. I think America knows that. And as far as the nuclear weapons for Iraq, way back when the war was beginning, we had Mohammed Al-Baradei on this program. We had American Inspector Scott Ritter on this program, and both of them knew there were no nuclear weapons in Iraq. They knew it. They stated it at the time, and yet the Bush administration went right on proclaiming that there was, that we should believe them. And since that time, as you know, we have found that we cannot believe the Bush administration.
Absolutely, but I think as you have impression, of course, you know, as you know, the last book for the George Tenet memoirs are whitewash, but there's another book by the CIA chief in Europe, you know, who published his book, in which he said that they had information that there are no there's no weapons WMD program in Iraq, and he says in his book that we got this information from the foreign minister of Iraq. You know, apparently they have found somebody to get to him, but that, and they had actually passed on this information, you know, early 2003, that there definitely no WMD. But see, there again, apparently it's not well established. But again, you see, what really I have to say frightens me, because I have read most of the books published on the subject, including Bob Woodward's first book, Bush at War, in which there's a wonderful appendix or epilogue in which Bob Woodward has one-to-one interview with George W. Bush on the tape, 120 minute long, and Bush says, "I go by my gut reactions.
Yes.
So I said to myself, now here is the most powerful man in the world. He's simply going on something with the gut reactions, which means if you're going for gut reactions, you are saying goodbye to your head. You are saying goodbye to expertise provided to you by, you know, hundreds of people. You are saying goodbye to experience. You are saying goodbye to historical events. And simply, you know, he says, of course, the North Korean dictator. I go back gut reaction, you know. And that explains so much. And therefore, I go back to what I said earlier. All the books I have read, Paul O'Neill's memoirs and Richard Eklock's books, etc., what really frightens me, that here is the United States of America, it is going to attack, invade a sovereign state of Iraq. At no point at the highest level of the U.S. government, either at the National Security Council or at the cabinet level, is there any discussion to say, okay, fellows, what do you say? I mean, should we attack? Should we not attack? And if we attack, what's the upside? If we don't attack, what's the downside? Et cetera, et cetera. Let's discuss. Let's discuss. And having discussed, maybe even take a vote. What do you say? You go in, we, you know, don't do whatever. At no point in the, you know, from January 2001 to March 2003, is there any record of the U.S. administration at the top policymakers discussing whether to attack or not to attack. On what are the basis of the matter? There's no discussion. There's no voting. Now we find, oh, this fellow, Colin Powell, oh, he said there was a conference in Aspen, Colorado. You know, I spent 2.5 hours trying to persuade George W. Bush, you know, don't do it, it's make a mess, et cetera, et cetera. So I said to myself, wait a minute, Colin Powell, you were Secretary of State. And if you had this feeling or this conviction, you should have said, okay, President, you want to do it? Go ahead, do it. But I'm resigning. And you know, when I say I'm resigning, remember Cyrus Vance, who was Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter? And when Jimmy Carter and his National Security Advisor, Brzezinski, when they sent their own Delta Force into Iran to release the American hostages without even telling the Secretary of State, Cyrus Vance, as soon as I learned about this, the whole thing was a fiasco, he went up to Jimmy Carter and said, listen, you haven't even told me, no question of consulting me, but you haven't told me what you're doing. I'm resigning. And he resigned.
Is the honorable thing to do.
If Colin Powell had that kind of conviction, it's no use after 3 years to go and at a little place, at a conference of, you know, some people, small gathering, say that. He should have shown his guts and say, listen, I am resigning. Go and do it.
Sadly, see, that's...
That goes to show that there was no discussion on this very important event. And, of course, the result of Iraq, I don't have to tell you what a mess it is, you know.
Well, sadly, nobody did listen at the time. And Bush, a man using his gut reaction, a man not known for his logic and his genius, he's not exactly a Rhodes Scholar. It's one of the tragedies of American history. Dilip, we're just about out of time. Would you take just a moment and tell us about your books and where everybody can get them? And do you have a website and so forth?
No, I don't have a website. I think my books are published by Nation Books. You know, the Nation Books have their website. And the book is called, you know, the latest book is Blood of the Earth and the Battle for the World's Vanishing Oil Resources, published by Nation Books. The earlier book that I mentioned is Secrets and Lies, Operation Rocket Freedom and After, again, published by Nation Books. I also published a book on Iran called The Iranian Labyrinth, which is also published for the Nation Books, and of course, you know, Nation Books title. And as you know, that article that you mentioned, that's on TomDispatch.com, which is, you know, the article on the, you know, I think the title of that is America on the Downward Slope.
Yeah, our good friend Tom Englehart over at TomDispatch.com. We're out of time. Dilip Hero, I'd like to thank you so much for being on the program today. For those of you listening that would like to look up his books, you can Google that, and you can find much information on the Internet about Dilip.
Okay, thank you very much. My pleasure.
I thank you for being on the program today. There's a man that is an expert on Middle Eastern affairs, and he's a gentleman that you could talk to the entire day and get a wealth of information from. He has spent a lifetime studying the Middle East and the ramifications of Western meddling in that area. He knows of what he speaks. He does, Dilip Hero. And you can go to TomDispatch.com. You can find out a little bit more about him and some of the books that he's written and so forth. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. It's time for news coming up at the top of the hour. So stick with us. We'll be back. And we'll have our guests for the second hour with us when we get back from the news. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. After President Bush expressed some frustration with the inability of Iraq's government leaders to bridge political divides, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki struck back. Maliki said no one has the right to impose timetables on his government and that his country, quote, can find friends elsewhere. Realizing how his criticism was interpreted, President Bush reiterated his support for al-Maliki today at a speech for military veterans. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed today when their helicopter experienced mechanical problems and crashed. The UH-60 Blackhawk was on a night operation with another helicopter when it went down near Kirkuk. In northern Iraq, at least 28 people were killed when a suicide bomber drove a fuel truck into a police compound this morning. Law enforcement and civilians were among the dead. Another 91 people were wounded. After hitting the Yucatan Peninsula yesterday as a Category 5 storm, Hurricane Dean hit Mexico again this afternoon near Veracruz as a weaker Category 2 hurricane. So far, there are no reports of fatalities on the Mexican mainland. 13 were killed in the Caribbean along Dean's earlier path. The death toll from two storm systems, one of which is the remnants of Tropical Storm Erin, has reached 22. The storms, which moved across the Midwest and plains and caused widespread flooding, have now moved into Ohio, where more flooding is expected. Japan's defense minister today warned its country's opposition party that pulling Japan's support out of Afghanistan would send the wrong message to terrorists. Japan has been providing naval support since 2001. If the law authorizing the support is not renewed, Japan will pull its forces November 1st. The Pentagon announced it will shut down a program which collects information about civilian activity around U.S. military bases. Critics say the surveillance program targets anti-war protesters. The recommendation to end the program came from the Chief of Intelligence for the Defense Department. An indefinite curfew in six cities has been ordered by Bangladesh's interim military-backed government following pro-democracy student demonstrations. One protester has been killed and more than 100 injured in violence, which has spread across the country. The interim government initially had widespread support, but discontent has been growing over the rising cost of living. A recent Rasmussen poll has revealed 74% of American voters rate government ethics and corruption as the most crucial issue in the upcoming presidential election. And according to a Gallup poll, only 18% of Americans believe Congress is doing a good job. The approval rating is the lowest in more than 30 years. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read two of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton, The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press. Transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Researchers say they've discovered antioxidants in dark roasted coffee make the brew bitter and not caffeine as originally suspected. German chemists say their findings may change the way coffee beans are prepared. Authorities today raided a Beijing chopsticks factory and arrested its owner. The facility apparently collected used chopsticks and sold as many as 100,000 pairs daily without disinfecting them. Walmart announced tests reveal the presence of toxic melamine in Chinese-produced dog treats. The store recently moved from its shelves. Customers had complained their pets became ill after eating the chicken jerky treats. BJ's Wholesale Club beat Wall Street expectations by posting a 37% jump in quarterly profits. Analysts say the Massachusetts-based company was successfully turned around by effectively marketing perishable foods. Staples recorded an 11% surge in quarterly profits on sales of $4.29 billion. The world's largest office products retailer credited strong growth in overseas markets. Sachs narrowed its quarterly loss to a little over than $24.5 million. Quarterly sales increased 15%. Analysts say the upscale clothing store has concentrated better on serving its demographic. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.12 a barrel, and gold currently is trading at $668.58 an ounce, and the Dow Jones is up 110 points. You can always log on and find more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the news today. I sure did. And it's a pleasure to be with you. And, of course, you can give us a call here at the program live, 866-546-5254. And as promised, we have our guest with us here for the second hour of the program, Attorney Robert Weiss. And Robert wants to talk to you about this story that I believe CBS broke the story last week about this bisphenol A. This plastic additive that we're finding out about, that it's a terrible story. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Again, here we are faced with something that everybody is taking for granted, that we're just safe as can be. And as Grandma used to say, snug as a bug in a rug with all the products that we get. Everybody's safe, and let's just use them, and we'll all be fine. And we find out quite the contrary when it comes to this this BPA.
Yes, it's a very, very dangerous thing. Most people don't know about it. BPA was actually developed as a synthetic estrogen, as a competitor product to DES. I don't know if you remember DES, which was it was given to women in the in the, basically the 70s.
Yes, yes.
60s and 70s, and then the daughters of these women wound up having lawsuits with really horrible reproductive cancers and horrible injuries. So chemically, BPA is very similar to DES. You need to have a master's degree in chemistry to tell the difference between the two molecules. They're both synthetic estrogens. We've got evidence that the BPA causes problems very similar to DES. Now, BPA was never marketed as an estrogen because DES was a more potent estrogen, but it turned out to be a very, very useful plastic for its tensile properties, for the fact that it doesn't burn, so you can't break it, it's lightweight, things like that, to make it useful in certain things, and they wound up in baby bottles. And when you heat the baby bottles, you get leakage, and you get leakage of a human hormone, estrogen, which is responsible for a lot of problems, we believe, in this society. So what we did is we sued them, and we sued them under a kind of a novel theory. That was that we sued them basically saying that they fail to disclose that the product is estrogenic, and estrogen is a listed substance in California where you have to disclose a, you know, chemical, potentially dangerous chemical.
And they knew it,
and they didn't do it. Now what they're doing is they're defending a case we're not bringing. We're not bringing a case where we're fighting about the science as to whether or not this is, you know, safe or not safe, because they were able to buy the science. 90% of the independent studies, where it's not paid for by the industry, have some findings medical findings at low doses of exposure of to bisphenol. 100% of the studies that are funded by the industry have no findings.
Well, how does this happen? This goes through test after test after test, and just like all the medicines you see out today, we see the possibility of side effects. Did the possibility of this even come up at all from the companies?
I think that the companies have not admitted that there are side effects, but the National Institute of Health, which is convened a panel that was criticized as being too close to the industry, that panel, even though it was a packed panel and it was a stacked panel, found some evidence that would require people to use what they call the precautionary measure. So the defense that the companies are starting to this is a complex legal defense. They've known for years that this is bad. They've known that this litigation was coming. They've known that this was coming, and they've positioned themselves to defend against it.
So we're talking about litigation that's going to take place for years to come on this, are we not?
Oh yeah, it's probably going to take a few years.
And by a few, what do you mean by a few as an attorney?
Well, it's hard to say. Sometimes it's really unusual. These things get resolved in a short period of time, but it's not unusual to see the pressure. The news cycle is quicker. Getting information out on the internet is much, much quicker. And these companies are already coming under a lot of pressure because eventually, mothers are going to understand what's going on here. They're just not going to buy the product.
What are
a safer product. They'll come up with a product that doesn't contain this. That's
What are the ramifications of the side effects that the children, for example, are coming up with from the baby bottles?
It's been indicated in ADD, which is an epidemic. No one really knows why. Some people think, it just wasn't diagnosed years ago. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 48 years old. I don't remember anyone with ADD.
I'm a bit older than you are.
Do you remember people with that diagnosis?
No. No. The last thing I remember like this is the thalidomide back in the 50s, of course.
Right. That was another horror story.
Yes.
But it's not really that different because the difference is the thalidomide had horrible injuries. They literally had children with borings with fins as opposed to hands and feet. And so it was just so graphic and it was so horrible and it was pulled off the market immediately. This is a more subtle thing. This is micrograms of a human hormone. For instance, one of the effects that I personally and the scientists that I work with are looking at are the fact that the age of menstruation in young girls has gone down throughout the industrialized world. Now there are girls menstruating third and fourth grade. That's another thing that didn't happen when I was a kid. Why is that? No one knows. The sperm count of men in the industrialized world is going down. No one knows why. There's 1 in 155 children diagnosed with autism. And no one knows why. So the only ones who really understand what this chemical is doing to us are the companies themselves that have been studying it in an effort to determine their liability. And one of the things that we're doing in this lawsuit is we're going to ask in our discovery request for all that information. And we'll see what happens.
I hate to be such a cynic on something like this, but do some of these companies, in your opinion, and I know this is harsh, but do they take their chances with these things, hoping that the profits will outweigh the any liabilities they may come across later on?
Well, what happens is it's an interesting dynamic. What happens is that usually in these companies, a problem. Like, for instance, right now we're involved in another piece of litigation involving a soil and air pollution in a town, and the problem was obvious to this company, it's a railroad company, and what happened was there were certain people who were responsible for the problem, containing the problem, and that's their job. And what they try to do is they try to just pass the ball, hire lawyers to defend the lawsuits, hire a PR person to say that black is white and white is black. And they get to do that to a certain point until something outside of the company structure shakes it up. So you have to have a sort of a outside hit. Otherwise, a corporation, of course, is not a person and has a tendency to just keep going on in the same way. And there's no way to really write it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. Well, you mentioned another suit that you're involved in. Is this all in conjunction with Rights for America?
Yeah, it's all Rights for America.
Okay.
And if anyone's interested in looking at Rights for America, it's www.rightsfor. The number 4 is the easiest way to get there. You can get there, Rights for America, Rights for Americans. And, you know, we're very interested in speaking with everyone who wants to correspond with us.
Can you tell us briefly, other than children and other than baby bottles, what other kind of products are we looking at here with this?
Oh, well, some of the products are not really objectionable. It's in, like, for instance, bicycle helmets, and it's in CDs, and that's okay because you don't usually eat those things. But it's also in water bottles. And you know, what I tell people, adults, something I learned from doing this is I always carry a bottle. I have a bottle of water right next to me right now, one of these people who always has a water bottle around. And a lot of times in the summer, I would just take my water bottle, put it in my car, drive away, not finish the entire bottle, and the sun would come in, and it would heat the bottle, and I'd go back in my car, and I'd drink the warm water. Can't do that.
Well, thanks for telling me that. I've been doing that for a long time.
A lot of people have.
My wife looks at me, "You're not going to drink that warm water." Well, yes, I am. It's wet.
Yeah, well, the warm water is fine. It's the plastic that's leaking inside.
Thank you for that information. A bit late, but I'll change my ways on that. Robert, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the program and explaining this. This is a big story, and I think we're going to hear more about it. Again, the website is rightsforamerica.com. You can find out more about it there and other ventures that you're involved with. And much luck with this, and I know you'll be dogged in your pursuit of this. It's an important cause, and I want to thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you, sir, very much.
Thanks so much for being on the program. That's a story you're going to hear a lot more about. And, my God, I didn't know that. And I have been warned about that many times. But I won't dare let my wife know what he just said. I often do that. I take a bottle of water in the car with me, and I don't finish it, and it'll sit there for a day or so. It's got the lid on and all that, and I'll end up drinking the rest of it. And, you know, who knew? Who knew? Well, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call here at the Guy James Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
All the times I can't be with you, and you get tired of being left alone, and your mind needs reassuring that for me you're still the only one. This love I have for you is stronger now than it's ever been. So if you ever get the feeling I don't love you, feel again. Darling, all you have to do, feel the love I have for you, is touch me.
Touch me.
But you can't help but know there's a world of love that's burning deep within. Every day I'm thankful that I have you as a lover and a friend. So if you ever get the feeling I don't love you, feel again.
touch me.
Touch me.
And you can't help but know there's a world of love that's burning deep within. Every day I'm thankful that I have you as a lover and a friend. So if you ever get the feeling I don't love you, feel again. If you ever get the feeling I don't love you, just feel again.
Hey, I do love my audience. I do. That song was appropriate. I love it. I love it when you join us here on the show every day. Welcome to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And if you'd like to call the program, you may do so by giving us a call toll-free at 866-546-5254. And if you've got an unlimited calling plan and want to use your nickel, you can try us at 941-876-6896. We've got a caller on the phone right now. Hi, this is Guy. Who are you?
Well, my name is Fontaine. I'm from Uniontown, Pennsylvania.
Uniontown, just kind of southeast of Pittsburgh just a little bit.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And my question to you is this. Is why, I'm a veteran myself, okay? And I do not support Bush none whatsoever. And I cannot understand the leadership and some members of the veterans organizations, also the VFW and American Legion, why do they support this man when he has shown by his policies that he's against veterans? I recall at the time when he was against them, veterans that's put in 20 or 30 years of service and was also eligible for service, connected disability benefits, how he was going, you know, remove them from that qualification. And then there was also how he's against right now this prison veterans bill, which will give full benefits to Iraqi veterans coming back, and he's against that. And he's also not supporting the troops by inadequate supplies and armor. So how in the world, if you could explain to me, Guy, these veteran groups could support this man?
Well, you know, I think you said something very important in almost maybe the first or second sentence when you started speaking on the program here today, and you said the word leadership.
Okay.
And I have often wondered, I wish that I had some statistics to give you. I would love to know what the membership of the VFW and the Legion and so forth, I'd like to know what the membership feels like, because regardless of what a person thinks about this war, that's neither here nor there. You bring
right
up the issues of how we take care of the people who have gone and done their duty. Whether the war is seen as right or seen as wrong, these people have done the honorable thing. They have gone, they've followed their commander-in-chief, who's speaking for the United States, supposedly, and they've done what they've been asked to do. And to come home and not be taken care of in the very best manner possible is just criminal.
Yeah, to me, it's the height of hypocrisy.
Oh, it is.
You understand?
It is.
The president and the Republicans love to give these high-sounding speeches. You understand? How we appreciate our veterans and what they have done for us, but when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, they do not support them at all.
No, they don't, and they've shown it, as you mentioned, they've shown it by their actions time and
right
time again. The body armor thing when this war started, the Humvees that weren't armored properly.
That's right.
Probably risked the lives of many soldiers by not sending in enough soldiers, if that's what you were going to do inevitably. And
yeah.
But so many horror stories, and we've had veterans on this show that have come home. I mean, these people, and you're a veteran, and other people are veterans, they're entitled. And I don't think it's anything, it's not a benefit, it's an entitlement. You should get the very finest treatment that there is available to anybody in this country.
I agree. And you know what? My impression about this war, and why the president wants to extend it. See, him and of his class, the investor class and the elite, see, they hate the Franklin Delano Roosevelt policies. You understand?
Oh, sure.
They hate it with a passion.
They do.
And therefore, I think by wasting billions of dollars over there, they can use that as an excuse to cut funding, which they have done in certain programs. They want to eliminate the safety, social safety net. You understand?
Well, if that money is going for veterans care, that's money that's not going in the pockets of some big shot somewhere.
That's right.
The tax cuts that he gave the wealthy, that's money that couldn't go into the pockets of the wealthy. So
that's right.
And besides that, the wealthy's not the ones over there fighting this war, as is always the case.
That's true.
And it's just criminal. Say, thanks so much for bringing that up today. If you ever find any statistics on how the membership actually would, what they think of the president coming and giving these propaganda speeches in front of them, and it makes me sick when I see
it. It makes me sick, too.
Yeah.
Of my stomach. And I wish you would look up, find that out. I'm going to try myself, and please give that information, you know, over the air, please.
I'd love to. And
okay,
thanks so much for a great call.
Okay, bye.
Hypocrisy. Where is it shown any more than toward the veterans who come home from these wars, maimed and mutilated? The Walter Reed scandal that we had recently. Veterans hospitals all over this country, and I'm not indicting all the people that work for the veterans hospital. God knows there's a lot of great people that work for the VA. A lot of great people that work for the VA. I met one on an airplane not too long ago, and we had a long discussion about it. Some very, very fine people, and many of those people work so hard to do the best job they can for our veterans returning home from these awful wars. But their hands are tied. They don't have the money to do things the way they ought to be done in many, many, many cases. We have thousands. Now we have tens of thousands of our American men and women coming home from this Iraq war that need treatment. They need psychological treatment. They need medical treatment. They're going to need the whole ball of wax for a long time. And the money isn't there. And every time this Bush administration gets a chance, they turn their backs on the veterans while going in front of the VFW, just like the caller said, going in front of the VFW and the Legion, going to their conventions, going out and speaking and putting the little banners up behind them like he always does, support the troops, all this and that. Giving these speeches, that's all well and good. And then going back to the Oval Office and taking out the pen and striking something from a spending bill that ought to be for the benefit of the veterans. It's duplicitous hypocrisy. It's a terrible thing. And like I mentioned, it doesn't matter how you feel about this war. You can be all for this war. That's your prerogative. But don't tell me you're for the veterans, that you're for the soldiers. Don't tell me you support the soldiers when you support the Bush administration's policies toward our veterans that have been nothing but detrimental. Don't tell me you support the troops. Because if you support George Bush's policies and procedures toward our troops, you do not support the troops of the United States. You do not. It's an ugly situation. A really, really ugly, ugly situation. Speaking of ugly situations, I'll be going to Washington a couple of weeks from yesterday, I think it is. And while there, I'm going to go around and do some things that I always do when I go to Washington. I'll be visiting this place and that place and places that I like to see. And isn't it odd that when you go to Washington and you want to go to, let's say, the Capitol building or and get one of the good tours? I'm not talking about the public tours where you got to stand in line outside, but I'm talking about one of the private tours, one of the really good ones that you got to beg and plead to get. You got to give them your social security number so they can do a background check on you, all this sort of thing. Not long ago, I've mentioned to you many times, my cousin was the treasurer of the United States. Maybe some of you didn't know that, some of you did. And not so terribly long ago, during the Clinton administration, by the way, not in the Bush administration. But she was the treasurer of the United States. Her name was Mary Ellen Withrow. And if you've got some of the bills around, maybe the 50s or 100s, and some of the bills that last a long time, you'll see her name over there on the left-hand side, the treasurer of the United States. And Lloyd Benson at the time, most of that time, was the secretary of the treasury. And Mary Ellen Withrow was the treasurer of the United States, former treasurer of the state of Ohio for several years. And just to go in there, you had to give your social security number. So they could do a background check, and they can do a background check in Washington on you pretty doggone quick. Which brings me to my point. How can it be that average Joe citizen, lunch bucket Joe, you and me, I don't have a lunch bucket anymore, but I consider myself one of those people. How can it be that we have to go through these background checks and everything when we just want to do something simple like go to Washington and go in a federal building here and there? And then we read a story like this. From ABC News, and I don't know how many of you saw this, but I'm appalled when I read something like this, especially after having to give my social security number and everything to the U.S. government for a background check just to go in a damn federal building. The U.S. government paid a wanted international criminal roughly $60 million to fly supplies into Iraq in support of the war effort. Intelligence officials have considered arms merchant and international trafficker Victor Bout one of the greatest threats to U.S. interest, in the same league as Al-Qaeda kingpin Osama bin Laden. Interpol has issued a warrant for his arrest. The United Nations Security Council has restricted his travel, yet from 2003... through at least 2005, this Victor Bout, Pentagon contractors used air cargo companies known to be connected with him to fly an estimated 1,000 supply trips in and out of Iraq that made him $60 million. They said it could have been worse. Shortly after September the 11th, 2001, Bout, whose arms shipments to the Taliban regime in Afghanistan were believed to have aided Al-Qaeda, he pitched the CIA a multi-million dollar proposal to help rout the Taliban from the country and capture Osama bin Laden. The story is just phenomenal. Now, the deal never came together, but Bout found business with the United States in 2003, flying supplies into newly invaded Iraq as a subcontractor to U.S. military contractors, including Fluor and Kellogg, Brown and Root, KBR. You've heard us mention that name. They've got military flight records as evidence. These flights continued even after Bush signed an order banning Americans from doing business with Bout or his associates. A spokeswoman for KBR acknowledged that the company had hired a Bout-connected cargo firm through an intermediary, but that it had no knowledge of the ties at the time. In a January 2005 letter to Congress, then Assistant Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, there's that name again, he admitted that the Defense Department did conduct business with companies that in turn subcontracted work to second-tier providers who leased aircraft owned by companies associated with Mr. Bout. Now, defense officials were busy making sure Bout's planes no longer flew for the United States, he wrote. 9 days after Wolfowitz's letter about controlled airplane touched down in Mosul, Iraq, after the Congress had been assured that we were no longer doing business with this man. Bout's work in Iraq first became public in a May 2004 article in the Financial Times newspaper. CIA officials in Washington secretly warned colleagues in Baghdad of the ties in the fall of 2003. They said it would appear that it did not make its way to the correct folks. Unnamed CIA officials now say. Bout didn't just walk away, and get this, Bout didn't just walk away with millions of taxpayer dollars. The military issued Bout's pilots supply cards allowing them to gas up their planes for free when landing in Iraq. We're doing business with a known criminal. We give him a credit card to gas up his planes for free. A Defense Department spokesman confirmed that Bout's fleet made off with nearly 500,000 gallons of fuel from the Baghdad airport, courtesy of the U.S. Air Force. Oh my God. And yet you and I, if we want to go take a little walk through the White House or the Capitol building in one of the private tours, we've got to give them our Social Security number so that they can do a background check on us and make sure we're legit. Of course, we're not trying to get 500,000 gallons of free fuel from the United States Air Force, and we're not trying to get $60 million from the Pentagon like this Mr. Bout did. You can't make this stuff up, can you? If you wrote a book with all that in, everybody would read the first chapter and go, hell, this is too stupid. I can't. On a lighter note, speaking of things crazy, and that story is crazy, we found out in Utah, of all places in Utah, a stripper married to the local police chief is caught selling drugs. The Wendover, Utah police chief has to enforce law and order in his own marriage. Last Friday, Chief Vaughn Tripp's wife was arrested for selling drugs at the club where she worked as a stripper. 39-year-old Sylvia Tripp was among three people arrested during a sting at the Southern Exposure Strip Club. She allegedly sold drugs to undercover officers. Tripp, who performs under the stage name, and you'll love this, Ecstasy, reportedly peddled oxycodone and morphine pills. Now, she should get a hold of old Rush Limbaugh over that. He was on that oxycodone or whatever. And she posted bail and was released from jail. And no formal charges have yet been filed. Well, there's one thing about it. When your name is Ecstasy, it shouldn't be too hard for cops to bust you for drugs now, should it? 866-546-5254. We like to talk on this program about the lies and prevarications that often come in from the Republicans and some of the outrageous statements. And I've got a couple that maybe you've heard, but I just want to play these for you. And some of the outrageous things our good old pubby friends have said as of late. Rudy Giuliani, and then our friend Mitt, Mr. Plastic Man Romney.
Sabrina, thank you. Rudy Giuliani is firing back this morning against criticism by relatives of 9/11 victims. They say the former New York City mayor mismanaged the aftermath of the attacks. But Giuliani says he was with rescuers at the debris pile and even spent more time than some workers.
This is not a mayor or a governor or a president who was sitting in an ivory tower. I was at Ground Zero as often, if not more than most of the workers. I was there working with them. I was there guiding things. I was there bringing people there. But I was exposed to exactly the same things they were exposed to. So in that sense, I'm one of them.
That's right, Rudy. You're one of them. You had the helmet and the mask on, and you were down there digging garbage and asbestos and steel and concrete and paper and blood and guts and everything else out of there, just like all the rescue workers were and all the firemen and the police. Isn't that what you're saying, Rudy? You're one of them. Oh, Mr. Hero. Mr. Hero, America's mayor, a man who wants to be taken seriously as a candidate for president of the United States, a man that has made his almost his entire reputation off the deaths of 3,000 Americans in 9/11, and now he tells this piece of crap to the American public? Rudy Giuliani? Shouldn't that statement right there be enough to bury his candidacy with almost everybody? And yet he is the leading candidate from the right? How could you be in support of this man and then hear him make that statement and still support him? And let it be known that there are millions of Republicans who support this man in spite of him saying, making a statement, an absurdity like that, a slap in the face to every one of those workers in New York City. It's no wonder the fire department there hates him. It's no wonder the police department there hate him. My God. Mr. 9/11 hero, and I'll repeat it, I've said it so many times on this show, you're probably tired of hearing about it, but what the hell did Rudy Giuliani do after 9/11 that any other responsible mayor in the United States of America wouldn't have done? We know he made a hell of a lot of mistakes that were detrimental to this whole thing leading up to 9/11, putting the command center in a building that had already been attacked. And yet, the people on the right are so blinded by the right that they'll still consider this guy a serious candidate for the presidency of the United States. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm going to save that one, and I'm going to play that again from time to time, if you don't mind, because I think every American ought to hear that. And then there's this one. It's a little longer, but it's from Mr. Plastic Man, Mr. Be Whatever You Need Me to Be, if you'll just elect me president, Mr. Mitt Romney.
Hi, my name's Rachel Griffiths. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Rachel.
And asking for our comments, and I appreciate your recognizing the Iraq War veteran. My question is, how many of your five sons are currently serving in the U.S. military? And if none of them are, how do they plan to support this war on terrorism by enlisting in our U.S. military?
Well, the good news is that we have a volunteer army, and that's the way we're going to keep it. And my sons are all adults, and they made their decisions about their careers. And they've chosen not to serve in the military in active duty, and I respect their decision in that regard. I also respect and value very highly those who make a decision to serve in the military. And I think we ought to show an outpouring of support, just as I suggested, a surge of support for those families and those individuals who are serving. My niece, for instance, just to tell you what a neighborhood can do and how touching it can be, my niece, Misha, living out west, her husband, I think he got a call on a Tuesday. He's in the National Guard. He got a call on a Tuesday that he was going to be called up and shipped overseas on a Thursday. And they'd bought a home. They hadn't landscaped it. But the rules in the neighborhood were that unless you got your home landscaped within a year of the time that you bought your home, they began fining you because they didn't want people having mud holes in front of their homes. And she was very worried. And just before the year expired, she woke up one morning, looked out the window, and all the neighbors were out there, rolling down sod, putting up trees, getting it all done. It's remarkable how we can show our support for our nation. And one of the ways my sons are showing support for our nation is helping to get me elected because they think I'd be a great president. And my son, Josh, bought the family Winnebago and has visited 99 counties, most of them with his three kids and his wife. And I respect that and respect all of those and the way they serve this great country. Thank you.
And my son, Josh, he bought the family Winnebago and took his children with him out on the road and has visited county after county trying to get me elected as president. What a patriot he is.
Nice diversion there, Mitt. Old Mitt will tell you anytime, anywhere that he supports every last aspect of Junior Bush's decision to go to war in Iraq. That he is one of these tough guy Republicans, just like all of them, that stand up on that stage and, yeah, by God, we're going to kill them all. He's one of those. And he stands up there and has five healthy grown sons, all of them big enough to eat hay, as we used to say. All of them of prime military age. But you see, Mitt Romney is wealthy. Mitt Romney is a man of privilege. His kids don't have to go to the military. They don't need a job that bad that they have to go to the military. Oh, they're all great patriots, to be sure. Absolutely. Because they want their daddy to be president, and they're willing to buy the family Winnebago and travel up and down the road trying to get Mitt elected as president. Mitt, whose chain are you trying to pull here? My God. How stupid. Oh, I guess don't answer that. I was going to say, how stupid do you think the average American voter, Republican voter is? But then again, Mitt knows the answer to that question, and so do I, and so do you. We all know the answer to that question. Why else did, and if we didn't know the answer, and if there isn't a great answer to that question, why, how else do you explain the fact that Junior George W. Bush is sitting in the Oval Office? And I think you know what I'm getting at. And if you want to consider it a smear, a whatever on the intellect of those, who was it that said it? I forget who said it right now. I'll give George Bush one thing. At least he's a hell of a lot smarter than the people that voted for him. And I'll wholeheartedly support that statement. Amazing what these people try and do. And then we've got our Democrats now playing politics with all this, afraid to do the right thing. And I like Chris Dodd. I not so long ago sat in a room in the Capitol building with Chris Dodd and just a few other folks, a couple of other senators, Carl Levin, Chris Dodd, Senator Leahy, Bernie Sanders, Klobuchar from Minnesota, I think that was it, and probably a dozen or so of us, maybe 15 broadcasters. I know Schultz was there and Randy Rhodes was there. Of course, Guy James was there. And I remember Chris Dodd telling us about his position on the war. Well, it's a little different now. Just a little different, and I should not. I misspoke. Not his position on the war, but his position on impeachment. You talk to these gentlemen privately, and they'll tell you one thing. Publicly, they'll say something completely different. And I certainly agree with Jack Afferty. I love Jack Afferty on CNN, and this is what he had to say about the stupid statement of Chris Dodd.
Here's an interesting statement, Wolf. Impeachment proceedings suck all the oxygen out of the room. So says Democratic presidential candidate Chris Dodd. The Des Moines Register reports the Connecticut senator told a political group in Iowa yesterday that it would be a mistake for Democrats to begin impeachment proceedings against President Bush and could jeopardize their control of Congress. He thinks Americans would object to Congress focusing on impeachment for 14 months instead of other problems facing the country. I wonder if he's right about that. Dodd also said this: if we become preoccupied with an impeachment process, I think we could turn off an awful lot of people who might otherwise be willing to support Democrats and be willing to change the direction of the country in the fall of 2008, unquote. So Senator Dodd is putting the election prospects of the Democratic Party next year ahead of whether or not President Bush might be guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors of the kind which would mandate his removal from office. Congress's job is oversight of the executive branch, unless, of course, that oversight interferes with getting elected. Here's the question, then. Democratic presidential hopeful Chris Dodd says it would be a mistake for Democrats to impeach President Bush. Is he right? Email CaffertyFile, CNN.com, or go to CNN.com/CaffertyFile. It's a pretty amazing statement to come out of Senator Dodd's mouth, Wolf.
We'll see.
Pretty amazing statement indeed. And it paints the picture for us, and it's an accurate picture, that you go into the Senate office building and you have the United States senators sitting there and saying to themselves or to each other, oh, okay, on the one hand here, we have this impeachment question. And on the other hand, we have our reelection or those running for president, possibly our nomination for the Democratic, not to be the nominee for the Democrats, or possibly being elected to the Oval Office. We've got these two choices here. And I think, I'm talking as Mr. United or Ms. United States Senator here, that if I bring up this impeachment thing, maybe that'll damage my chances to be President of the United States. Well, first of all, I think that's wrong. If that's what they think, if they honestly believe that the American public wouldn't put up with that, I think they're wrong. I think once impeachment proceedings started against this president right now, I think it would snowball. I think you'd see lots of Republicans jumping on the bandwagon. I'm damn sure you would. They went out from underneath this, too. So, first of all, I think politically they're wrong on that. Secondly, Senator Dodd, what is your responsibility to your constituency? What is your responsibility to the people of the United States? Are you not there for oversight? Are you not there to be a co-equal branch of government and keep an eye on the executive branch? Is that not one of your responsibilities? And if you don't do it, Senator Dodd, who will? And if you don't think there's enough evidence to bring impeachment proceedings against Richard Cheney and George W. Bush, then you don't have the intellect it takes to be a senator of the United States. You've got your head and your ass are in the sand or someplace it doesn't belong. You do not go in front of a bunch of American voters and say a thing like that. And let's boil it down. Let's boil it down to the lowest common denominator here. What did Chris Dodd really say? Chris Dodd really said, and don't get me wrong, he's not alone in this. What Chris Dodd was actually saying, that his election or his reelection to the United States Senate is a hell of a lot more important than impeaching George Bush and being accountable to the American people. That is what he was saying. Sad, but true. When I hear things like that, it makes me wonder why sometimes, and I have these feelings, I know you do as well. But when I hear things like that coming from our elected leaders, I sometimes throw up my hands and say, why bother? Had someone ask me today a question that I gotta be honest, to put me back on my heels just a little bit, relating to my what I do here on this show and my interest in the politics in the United States. and said to me, "Why do you have this great interest, or this involvement, I'm paraphrasing now, in something that isn't real?" "Because these people aren't real. And you know they're not." And I have to tell you, I'm usually not at a loss for words, but I came up with the pat answer, because somebody has to care. Even though things are wrong, someone has to try and make them right again. And although it sometimes looks very, very dark, hopefully there is some light at the end of the tunnel. So that's why I do this. That's why I'm involved in the political process, and that's why you are. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know my listeners, and I know you're interested in what goes on in the United States. I know you're interested in the welfare of this country. I know you're interested in what's best for this country. I know you're interested in wanting to share opinions with one another, so that we can come to a consensus on what we ought to do, what we need to do to make this a better country. But sometimes, as it was today, that's a bit of a difficult question to answer. Why do you bother with something you know isn't real? Senator Dodd isn't real. Neither is any other politician. It would make a statement like he did today. And like I said, just pretty much says, "Hey, my staying in the United States Senator, or maybe ascending to the office of the President, is far more important to me than any impeachment of any old George Bush. Don't bother me with that. I don't want to go to the time and trouble to do it. Hell, he may deserve it. I don't know." I'd almost bet you that you and I know more about it than he does. Big mistake, Senator Dodd, and I just assume that most of your people around you will tell you that you've made a big mistake saying something like that today. Very, very, very disappointing. Very disappointing. Surprising? Not in the least. Maybe surprising that he'd say it in public, but surprising that he was thinking it? No, not at all. As I mentioned earlier, we've got a couple of great guests tomorrow. We brought you live from Baghdad freelance journalist David Enders. He's just returned from Iraq. He spent time not just in the Green Zone, as he explained that day, but throughout Baghdad and throughout the country. And he's going to tell us exactly how things are. You want the plain old unvarnished truth of how things are in Iraq right now? You'll talk to a man that's been there a lot. And not from inside the wires, they say, from not inside the protected green zone. A guy that's been out amongst them. And also, we're going to have as our guest tomorrow, Dar Jamil. He's an independent journalist who spent over 8 months reporting from Iraq. And he's got a book coming out called Beyond the Green Zone. He's been out and about. He was not one of these embedded journalists that puts forth, spews whatever the military wants him to say. And he said there's no need to wait for a September report to tell us what every Iraqi source I can already confirm says, much of which has been released recently in that Oxfam report. 8 million Iraqis are in need of emergency assistance. Over 2 million are displaced inside Iraq, and over 2 million have fled to neighboring countries. He'll tell us all about it tomorrow. Two terrific, riveting guests coming up tomorrow. Don't miss this show tomorrow. If you've got friends or neighbors that argue with you what things are like in Iraq, have them tune in and hear it straight from the horse's mouth, from guys that have been out and about and haven't been involved in these dog and pony shows that the military puts on for our United States Congress when they go over there, so that and the reporters from the New York Times, so that they can come home and tell everybody just how rosy, hunky-dory everything is. No. You'll hear it on this show tomorrow. The way things are in Iraq. The truth, and nothing but the truth. I want to thank you for listening to the program today. As always, I value your listenership. Hope you'll tune in to the rest of the great programs coming up on the Head On Radio Network today. Mark and Bob coming up. Thanks to Billy Shears for the great music today. And I want to remind you once again that you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Talk to you tomorrow, gang.